Follow me and ponder the question. What if?
Greetings, Swamp Kittens, and welcome back to another installment of I Want My MCU TV. I'm your hostess, Lisa Schmeisser, and with me are Kelly Gamont.
Howdy do.
And Don Melton.
Brains. Oh, wait, that was last week.
That was last week. I'm sorry. I'm still also, I think from now on, I'm just going to refer to myself as the hostess.
I like it.
The accent on the wrong syllable there really makes it special. Anyway,
it does indeed.
Anyway, we're here today to talk about season one, episode six of Marvel's What If? As in, what if one of these episodes actually ended on anything other than a cliffhanger? And
I was going to be ruder than that, but we'll stick with that
one. Oh, geez. Okay.
But, you know, I feel like we do some light warm-ups now, and then when we get into the tripartite format of our podcast, we can really let her rip. To recap the tripartite format of our podcast, our first section is the remix, where instead of recapping the episode, we just identify what has been remixed from the mainstream MCU and led us into this week's 30-minute flight of fancy. The second part of our podcast is the reaction part of the podcast, where we talk about what we thought of the episode, and we get up on our feelings sometimes. We do a little bit of, you know, series analysis and basically just leave it all out on the table. Like it's a big, messy Oscar picture where everyone cries and tries for an award. And then finally... finally, the last segment is a little something we like to call Really? Whereup with Lisa and Kelly, whereupon we pelt Don Melton, PhD in Marveliana, with our questions about how these MCU shows do or do not reflect decades upon decades of comic book canon. All right. So now that we've got our format, let's get into segment one of our podcast, the remix. And this week's remix is... What if Killmonger had gotten a even lengthier head start on his scheming and dreaming to take down the world? Well, like the thing is you have a Wada who's all, what if Killmonger rescued Tony Stark? But like the thing is, Killmonger wouldn't have been there to rescue Tony Stark if he hadn't begun his elaborate planning years ahead of time. And like fixed on Tony Stark 5 years ago. So once again, we have the dude who's supposed to whatever with everybody.
But at least we saw him face on this time, suspended in the clouds as if a fat baby like God,
an omniscient, a disturbingly omniscient toddler.
Yes. It feels like we're getting more. I don't know. It's like he's filling in a little more. Yeah. He's still an omniscient toddler and mildly creepy. But we saw, just his eyes at one point, and then we kind of got an outline of a head, and then
you get, like, faint outlines. We're like, ooh, this is a pivotal thing. And like now he's strolling across the stage like he's Rod Serling. All, what if William Shatner broke his reading glasses? And you're like, no, Rod, don't remix it. but he's
gonna chuckle about that the rest of the night. I'm sorry, that was really funny.
but he's strolling across the stage all, meh, meh, what if, meh, 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 meh. And we have had several stalwarts in our faithful Kindle of Swamp Kittens ask this question before: who is Uwatu talking to? And kudos to them for framing the question early, because this was the first episode where I thought it legitimately looked to me like he was laying out his narrative explicitly for somebody. I have no idea who, but I think the visual representation is important.
I feel like you do, though, because last week you pointed out, what if he's talking to Kang?
Yeah.
And Don and I went, oh. Ooh. Mm-hmm. And Swamp Kitten Alex, hey Alex, they came in with my original theory of talking to Strange is dead. If Uhadu talks about somebody in the third person, that's probably not who he's talking to. So Kang seems passable. And the side question that went with that was, I guess we've moved to a response from the internet.
Here's the react portion of the event. All right, we're not, hello. You know, at some point we need to get like a sound we can play between these segments. It could be like the mating call of an alligator, or it could be like a bell, or
ding ding, we've made it to response,
like a clown's nose honking. I don't know, like we'd have to find something that's thematically appropriate.
Yes. No, you know what we need? We need the music hit from Batman when they show the words on the screen in like Batman 66, you know, oof. Oh,
Kelly is on this now, Lisa. Don't worry.
I am. Yes. Have faith. Just like I was on it when we had to start adding the beat poetry soundtrack underneath for Richard E. Grant. I spent so long doing and enjoyed it so much. So Alex's other question was, does Kang exist in any of these other universes, or is reality sufficiently disrupted by the 31st century that no version of himself is ever a serious multiversal threat, which is a thing that I am fascinated by, because once I read that, I went, yeah, I wonder. So, yeah.
Well, that kind of idea, I don't know if it was explored in the What If comics, but that was certainly explored in the comics themselves, to, you know, sort of put an end to Kang. You know, it's like, you know, go back in time and kill Hitler as a baby kind of thing.
Sorry, we just watched the Futurama episode where they travel in time and the professor makes a point of stopping to kill Hitler. So so that's
The classics. So anyway, you know, that wouldn't surprise me, because that whole thing, who knows, this show's at least going two seasons, so who knows if they explore that. But what was I gonna say? So the thing that got me on this was, yeah, it was very clear that Killmonger just wasn't in the neighborhood and decided to save Tony. It's like what Lisa said, he'd been planning this for a long time. So the divergence happened a long time ago. There were also some subtle things that were off a little bit in other ways. I mean, they did a lot of scenes from certainly Iron Man 1 and a few other things, but there were a couple of things that were just slightly off. And they had to throw in some humor there, you know, like when Tony Stark's laying on the floor and they're trying to figure out how to power their Gundam robot.
Yes.
And what about an arc reactor?
No, what about a miniaturized arc reactor? Oh no, that's dumb.
Yeah, that's dumb. And so there were throwaways like that. And I hate to say this, with the exception of the post Purple Stew conversation with Chala, that those were highlights few and far between. Now that said, I can watch Michael B. Johnson in just about anything he does.
Michael B. Jordan is just, yeah, I Jordan, could watch him
Jordan,
read the
so Johnson.
I had Jordan. I had two distinct highlights. I also want to call out the Pepper Potts character in this, because I really liked how they wrote her for this episode. I liked I liked that she was smart and skeptical. And even if she loved Tony, she was not like checking her brain out. Mm-hmm. And I think Beth Hoyt did, who voiced her, did a fantastic job of channeling the same wry, no nonsense tone that Gwyneth Paltrow brought to it.
Yes.
So I love that. I love the Pepper character a whole lot. There were two moments in this episode I really liked. And the first was when Killmonger is about to kill Tony, and Tony is trying to talk him out of it. And he's like, we're just two gearhead kids whose dads, you know, who lost our dads too early. And Killmonger says, you really can't see the one big difference between us. And I loved it because it brought home the point right there that Tony's never really considered racism or oppression to be problems because they don't affect him personally. Mm-hmm. And that Tony might congratulate himself on having cool Black friends, but he's never stopped to really think about the experience of growing up as a Black orphan in America, as Killmonger did.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember how he put it. Like, the difference between you and me is that you can't see the difference between you and me.
Yeah, that was perfect.
I think was how he put it. And like, yeah, that was, I really appreciated that moment in it as well. I have to say, I was excited for you, Lisa, when I saw what this episode was going to be, because I know how much you love Killmonger. So I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Yeah.
Best of the MCU villains and persists. So my complaint about Killmonger in this episode is they made him a little too competent and everything worked out a little too well for him.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and so that's my complaint is the villains shouldn't be this capable this early on, if that makes sense. But like, cause everyone just kept falling into his trap. And if the whole point is in this universe, Killmonger is very good at identifying, well, Pepper says it best in the episode when she's like, everybody wants something and I don't know what he wants.
Yeah.
And like, what you could do is you could argue that Killmonger figured out what everybody wanted. And by presenting himself as the guy who would just get them what they wanted, he gained their trust. And then he's like, ah, that was dumb on your part, stab. Anyway, to get back to the second thing is the T'Challa scene. I found that unbearably moving.
Yes, mm-hmm. It's very strong.
Both because first of all, it's the voice of a dead man animating a character who's speaking from the spirit world. And
that was rough. Yeah.
And the second thing is he sounded really weak, you guys. Like
he did.
In the other two voice performances we've gotten, his voice sounded a lot stronger. And here it just sounded, this is where he like legit sounds sick and it broke my heart.
I thought the same thing.
Same. It was really hard to listen to.
So what I would wonder, because I wonder about everything all of the time ceaselessly, that would be my superpower.
Hi, this is why Lisa and I are friends.
But what I wonder is if people who watch this episode in 10 years, when you probably have had more actors die of natural causes or whatever, if it will
when hit he's them, not like the only Avenger that we don't have around anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it will hit them the same way. Or if the
reason I
reacted so strongly is because it still hurts to have lost such a blazing talent in such an unfair way so quickly. You know?
Yes.
It's only been a year. So anyway, I was tremendously affected by that. It was a beautiful sequence. I did like the occasional soundtrack shout outs. That said, this episode is not my favorite for aesthetic reasons because I feel like a lot of the animation was rushed and kind of sloppy looking. And I don't know if they had to rewrite around Bozeman's illness or if they had to rewrite because they revised the story somehow, but this story also felt super rushed and sloppy and the voice work is fantastic, but it felt like it had a lot of missing scenes and there were a lot of really abrupt transitions. And, I kept thinking, this episode needs to be like 15 minutes longer. We need more of a sense of tension and suspense to get from the point where Killmonger insinuates himself into Tony Stark's life to the point where he just starts cutting down all of Tony's ties.
Yes.
And we didn't get that,
I definitely felt like, and I remember like taking a moment because I was watching it just before bed last night. And I remember sort of going like, did I nod off and miss like the middle of this? Because it felt very, it felt like that, like I've missed something clearly.
Yeah.
Like I went to the bathroom in the middle and forgot, you know, or something, because like what, like what happened here that I'm not seeing.
Yeah.
Like I felt like it was almost shorthand set up in a way because we didn't get like the, like any, you know, here's them in a bar. So now you can tell they're buddies, right? So now stab. You know, like it was, it like you said, it felt I don't know that I would have characterized it as rushed, but that's what the right word is for it, because it seems very, it did seem like I had skipped stuff somehow. Yeah. And I kind of wondered what was going on with it in that, for that reason.
That said, not my fave. And again, Killmonger remains my favorite MCU villain. Mm-hmm. Not my fave for the reasons I just listed. Also not my fave because I don't know about you guys. Okay, brief show of hands here. brief show of hands. Who here is getting tired of the cliffhangers?
You know, I was going to talk about this as part of my reaction is this is now, I think, the third episode where I have legitimately what I really wanted was to watch the second episode of this.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know what happens now that Shuri and Pepper have teamed up, because especially this version of Pepper. That was another thing I thought was actually really great in this episode. Like, I wanted that Pepper to be the one from Iron Man 3. Like, that would have been amazing. She totally deserves to wear the suit. Like, you know, that was kind of like where that was coming from. So I was really enjoying her. And then all of a sudden we were at the end. And this is another example of where I went, you know, I want to watch the next episode of this one. And I don't know if they are intentionally setting up two-parters or if this is all, you know, see what we did there, because we're just like with the movies, we're going to take all of this and we're going to use it to tell you what an overall coherent story in some fashion, you know, whatever it is. Like, I don't appreciate it because I'm not going into it knowing that. And because they're dropping it weekly, it doesn't feel like, you know, we're going to have to wait it out. And so we don't necessarily get the opportunity of like, well, I can watch all of them and then get to the end and go, oh, here's the coherent story thing that I was waiting for. Like, and we may not get one. Like, my theory from before was that we're going to get a few of the episodes of season one are going to be two-parters, and we in season two we're going to find out the rest of what happens with this story. But that sort of goes against everything that What If is, which is the one shot. And that's part of why I think I feel irked about this, is because, like, that's not the rules that I've been taught in this game. And so I don't like it.
There is no point to making this series a weekly series.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You could simply have dropped all the episodes at one time, because there's no connection here. There's no serial nature to this. So having it come out weekly is kind of pointless. They don't do something tying at least one of these back to something else, it will have just been a tremendous waste, because the What If and the gotcha thing at the end, you know, where I think Uatu says, you know, heroes never die, it's a nice sentiment, but like, I didn't need to go through that story to find that out.
Well, it's one of the first things you learn in any writing class is that ideally you find a way to tie the end of your article back to the lead paragraph. Like, you give your readers the sense of having taken them on a journey from one point to another and then guided them all the way through the journey. And this episode begins with, oh, in this world, you know, in this universe, Tony Stark never became the Iron Man. They never became the hero. And then at the end, it's like, oh, but Shuri and Pepper get to. So yay for the glass Avengers Tower, like whatever. It's like the glass ceiling, except for superheroes.
You know, and like, because I wanted to see that version. Like, I want to know the rest of what happens to the world. Well, if Killmonger doesn't out Obadiah, like, what happens with that? And does he get Tony out of Stark Enterprises? And like, all of the other stuff that would be different if that first film had been different.
Well, like, I think the problem I have with the whole framing with, oh, you know, sometimes heroes don't happen and sometimes heroism persists no matter what, is what you've managed to do is take a story in which you have a villain who's got an entirely legitimate grievance. with the nation of his birth, where he's like, you sat by and let colonialism wreck an entire continent. And how do you answer for the suffering of all of these people? And yet the framing of the story is, it's so sad Tony Stark couldn't be a hero, but his girlfriend gets to. And it's like, way to make Killmonger's point for him. Like, his own story cannot even be about what him. If colonialism has effed up human civilization for 400 years. Like, maybe that's a what if you could dive into Uatu, but instead it's like, oh no, the girl boss is actualizing. So I'm not loving that. And I think what I would have also have enjoyed with a Killmonger story is maybe instead of making him like this evil race war mastermind, which they were heading towards, like, what if he's not a jackball and he just wanted to find a way to get into Wakanda and he was entirely sincere about his motivations instead of turning them into a war machine? Like, what if he's more morally ambiguous and a real ends justify the means kind of guy instead of a dude with a vendetta? Like, that would have been genuinely interesting and forced him to grapple with a whole lot of stuff.
And I really thought that's where we were headed. It was like when he got there and the whole, like, I live to serve Wakanda or whatever it was he said, you know, when he was talking to T'Chaka and was acting all like, you know, yes, I'm swearing my eternal allegiance to you, uncle, and on, like, initially I 100% bought it because I just presumed like this is what he's been aiming for all along. He did all of this because he wanted family, and family, you know, all he ever wanted was his family. His was taken from him when he was young, and he just wants to reconnect like with the rest of them. And I really thought that was where we were headed, and so I was disappointed when it was sort of just he's a regular villain.
Yeah. You know, what if he's capable of massive execution of long ranging multi-year plans, but like he has no real goals?
That would be like daddy issues on a worldwide scale. Very on brand for Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's say, Don, you're awfully quiet.
No, I'm doing a very manly thing and listening. I was learning that. And the thing is, the bad thing about radio is nobody can see me nodding.
nodding vigorously.
And so, nodding vigorously. No, I agree with all of that. And I was thinking to myself, you know, how can I jump in and say this in a way that's not repetitive, but still sound smart? Nope, can't. Just shut up. No, you guys are completely right. These things just, you know, really irritated me. It's almost like, you know, what if Killmonger, but a still smarter douchebag?
I like that. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what we got. And like, I think it's a waste in many ways. There's a couple of moments, like you pointed out, Lisa, you know, his conversation with Tony, you know, the differences, you can't see the difference. Chala's confrontation at the end as a real spiritual panther.
Yeah.
Those were like little bright highlights. And the fact that the female characters in this were not silly and one dimensional. Yeah. I like all that. Props to that. We need more of that kind of stuff. But that's it? Come on. I mean,
yeah,
you could do so much more with the show. You showed such promise in the first episode of the series with Captain Carter, and maybe there being a real follow-on there. And then we're just getting a bunch of, you know, long, dark hallways that go nowhere.
I think, you know, I was pulling for the what if Killmonger's a good guy story, mostly because, like, I felt like that would have been a really interesting place for him to be, and not, you know, what if the road to Killmonger's villainy was just better paved. Like yeah. that felt, I don't know, somehow it felt cheap because yeah we got the broad strokes at the end, you know, yeah. of him like, I'm glad you like that.
It's like a parkway to villainy as opposed to like the two lane country road he had to travel.
Yeah, like I grew up on a gravel road.
Kelly, the better paved line is going to keep me giggling for quite a while.
Oh my gosh. Well, Kelly, you make a great point because they did explicitly present him as villainous because he's killing somebody who's positioned as a good guy in Tony. Mm-hmm. But the other thing to consider is Tony's not a good guy in this.
Yeah.
No, he hasn't learned yet.
He's an entertaining person. He's funny, but he's not good.
He is not yet the guy.
Yeah.
Who, when he gives his life as Iron Man, we care and it's very sad. Right now, he's still Iron Man 1. And if Tony Stark had died at the end of Iron Man 1,
no one cared.
It wouldn't have mattered. We wouldn't have cared.
I mean, he was callow. That's like a great, I feel like
perfection.
And so, you know, I feel like this episode kind of took the easy way out because it still posited Killmonger as this duplicitous villain. And it would have actually not have been that hard to tweak the writing slightly where we were rooting for Killmonger because he takes out this entitled billionaire who's going to unleash an army of unstoppable robots. And then he takes out a wicked arm stealer. But they had to go and have him kill Rhodey and T'Challa, both of whom come across as extremely, you know, upstanding here, and tip him to full villainy territory instead of asking the questions, what if Tony Stark needed killing?
Right now, that remix is something we'd be 100% behind.
Yeah.
You don't even know how hard it would be for me to edit that program because we would talk about it and how great it was and how interesting it was and how nervy a stance it is to remix the thing that made everybody think maybe Marvel stood a chance with this whole cinematic universe thing they thought they could do.
Or consider this. What if T'Challa and Killmonger team up and overthrow T'Challa's dad? Because T'Challa comes around to Killmonger's way of thinking with Wakanda should lead the world. That's a what if. Because that would have actually have vibed nicely with the fantastic Black Panther movie too, where you do see T'Challa come around and go, okay, we're going to engage in the world. We're not going to hide anymore. And here's why and here's how. Mm-hmm. And then promptly spend the next few movies getting punished for his good intentions by having the space dogs overrun Wakanda. But like there's so much more they could have done with this, and it really blows that you get a character like Killmonger who is smart and fascinating and morally complex and has legitimate good points, and you make him sort of a background in an episode that didn't look great and was ultimately framed to not even be about him.
Last three episodes it's about killing off everyone else,
which blows. That's very much that's like a child with toys where, you know, they've got the G.I. Joes and like, what if I drop three in boiling water and what if I fling three off the roof and what if oh come on, we all did it as kids, like
no, I didn't think of it like that.
My Barbies went totally through a grindhouse horror movie before I was 10. It was just that's how we played. But this has that feel. And honestly, I feel like killing off characters in the what ifs is kind of a cheap shock. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting a little tired of it. What I'd really like to see in the next three episodes would be something along the lines of, what if somebody starts messing around with these multiverses and dropping characters from one multiverse into another? Like, what if it's Killmonger versus Captain Carter? Because that would be something, you know?
Ooh. Oh, yes. I'd make popcorn for that episode. Well, and, you know, I think part of it is that it feels like we, as is evidenced by this program, we care about Killmonger. Because he's interesting and because he has a point of view that we can understand. He's not a bad guy because he's a bad guy and bad guys are bad.
Yeah.
Which is sometimes all it takes to be a comic book villain, and sometimes maybe a mask or a nice outfit. Like that's really about it. So I think
the issue is that Killmonger's point of view is not entirely wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And precisely. It's not even entirely immoral.
Right. No. He's got some points, which is part of what makes him such an interesting villain in the first place, is because, you know, like he hasn't made up some sort of slight against him. He's not mad about something that's like, you know, regular people just get over that sort of thing, you know, and like, just because I cut you off at the store doesn't mean you know, at the grocery store or express lane doesn't mean that you now need to like start an intergalactic war just to, you know, get ahead of me in line next time. Like, that's not villainy, right? Like, yeah. And that's not a fun journey to watch. Like, somebody who you watch have these conversations and talk about this kind of stuff and be this person, when you have that person, now that person's going, well, you know, what's a little genocide among friends? And you're like, whoa, how did we get there? You know, because he was really good at boiling the frog a degree at a time.
Yeah, yeah.
And, or boiling the alligator, I guess, you know, since it's MCU TV.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, that's where I'm just bringing it home. Like, yeah, that's part of what makes him interesting. And it really is frustrating because we do find him terribly interesting, because he's a terribly interesting character because of all his motivation and stuff. And for them to take the most interesting part of this story and make it the background, like you said, I'm just sort of violently agreeing with you, is really aggravating, because we want him to be sort of the same setup as we got before, which is why he's fun to watch and interesting. And we didn't get that at all. We just got, you know, he's kind of a bad guy because bad guys are bad. In this episode, they never even talked about what exactly happened to his dad. We got a reference to gang violence, and that was like it.
And you're like, you can't believe that. But no, also, like, the intro, Killmonger's intro in the movie is just so dang good. That whole museum setup.
Oh, the museum. Yes.
Like, the mixture of urbanity and brutality. And Michael B. Jordan did a fantastic job getting that across with his low-key, I'm everybody's pal, but I'm still pretty great delivery he had here.
Yeah.
That was... but at the same, you know, there was a visual impact. What I was going to say is, you're talking about how normal people don't normally like spin up into petty, kill you vendettas. Yeah. Related, there's a show I like that actually does have that. and it's one of my favorite sitcoms. It's AP Bio.
Oh, yes.
And it's currently streaming on Peacock. And what I love about that show so much is how the lead character every week like completely loses his mind with entitled disproportionate fury over something that is ultimately incredibly insignificant. Like, a bookstore has a cardboard standee of his philosophy department rival, or he finds out that his late mother had a boyfriend, and then he obsesses for the next 25 minutes of the show over how he's going to bring them low. And he's like Wile E. Coyote. He always fails. But like, just the fact that you have this, I wouldn't call him a force of nature, because force implies that it's effective.
Yeah.
You have this tornado of impotent energy, just like, anyway, sidebar, that's kind of hilarious. Like, people who, like, as long as it doesn't affect you directly and it remains firmly within the realm of fiction, watching people lose their mind for no good reason is pretty great. Didn't happen in this show that we're watching here.
And that was Killmonger, part of what undid Killmonger, was the blind rage. Like, that gave him a blind spot that everyone else could exploit in his undoing. And that was also the part that was frustrating, was, like you said, competence.
Yeah. So it was just...
this has been violent agreement on MCU TV.
Violent.
You know, maybe we should like rebound the podcast as Welcome to Violent Agreement with Don, Lisa, and Kelly.
Yep.
But right now, like, that's where we're at. I mean, yeah.
I'm actually annoyed at this show right now. And that we've got 9 episodes, and I every week I'm waiting, is this the one that you know, and it's been disappointing me for very strongly for 2 episodes in a row here, and which really
are you honked off, Don?
Really honks me. I am totally honked off, really honks me off, because it's so many great people I like, you know, doing the voices, and also doing this marvelous presentation. I would agree that the animation just didn't seem as tight this time, or as pretty, but it was still very good. And I think it's well animated, it's well directed, it's the actors are giving it, they're all, I think having Andy Serkis back.
Oh, fantastic. I mean,
yes.
I mean, he's just great in everything he does. And so, you know, stuff like that, you really love that. And then you just grit your teeth and mm-hmm. it's like, I'm just very upset at this. Yeah. And this was never a reaction in with any of the episodes of WandaVision, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, or certainly not Loki, which was really my my favorite of the series so far. Mm-hmm. The one good aspect that happened between this episode and the previous episode is we got the preview for Hawkeye.
Real world news into the mix. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Real world news into the mix. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to get watched by that. And I'm looking forward to getting schooled by Kelly and Lisa on this one.
Bro. We have an upcoming chapter of I Want My MCU TV titled, What If Don Didn't Read the Comic First?
Yes.
Because he didn't. He didn't read the Fractionager run of Hawkeye. And I actually started reading it a few months ago. I didn't, but way before Black Widow, like I didn't even realize, I kind of forgot that like there was going to be a Hawkeye show. Like it had been announced, but they hadn't really talked about it much since. And so I was just reading it again and going, this is so good. I'm having such a good time reading this book. It's so funny. And I love the commentary and the whole, like, everything about it was just fantastic. I was loving it. And then was like, oh, by the way, remember, that's coming to TV. And it's coming to TV with all of the characters that I think I really, really enjoy from the comic. It's not like there's tons of them anyway. So
The tracksuit mafia
is coming, and I'm so excited about it. I do have one question, Dawn, for you for this week's release segment. Mm-hmm. And that is... And this is a surprise. I did not give this to Dawn ahead of time because I had forgotten about it, honestly, mm-hmm. and then went and looked it up. I looked up who it was because I remember telling you at one point there was somebody that called Uatu the doer because he kept meddling in everything and I couldn't remember who it was because he tells everybody he's the watcher.
Yeah.
And there's probably some sassy pants is all more like the doer.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
His name is Adam Bernard Brashear, and he is Blue Marvel.
Oh, is yeah.
Who he is. And like apparently,
Blue Marvel?
Yeah. Yes. I don't know a whole lot about his history, and I kind of wanted to ask you if you had any sort of broad strokes you could fill in there. But apparently, he would call Uatu the doer because he knew he was a cantankerous toddler and couldn't help himself but to go like mess with a timeline.
Uatu, so. Hands are not for hitting. Hands are for holding.
So that guy.
I'm sorry, you realize that there's like an Uatu heavy episode coming up. I'm going to spend like the entire time like recapitulating Dr. Karp's advice for parenting toddlers and be like, this is how you have to deal with Uatu. You have to use caveman language.
There you go.
I'm going to love it. Now, use your words, Uatu.
Use your words. So I don't know the comic.
Blue Marvel.
I don't know the comic that well. I know it came out first decade of this century. I know it came out then and I'd heard of it, but you know that much about this or the relationship or when he ran into Uatu. So,
okay. That was really the question I had about it. And that was it. So there
you go. I have a really question for yes. you, which is, In the what if we just watched, we saw Killmonger insinuate himself into Tony Stark's circle as his new cool BFF, you know, displacing Rhodey. And what I was curious about is, have Killmonger and Iron Man interacted in the comics at all? Or is this purely an MCU invention?
No, they did. I can't remember what it was, but and it was not just Tony, it was Tony and Rhodey. And this was on like some visit to Wakanda after Killmonger. I think he had died and he was getting resurrected and something like that. I don't remember all the details.
Literally, the only person who's dead in the Marvel comics forever is Uncle Ben.
Yeah, Uncle Ben. And he, by the way, he wasn't, he also wasn't completely dead. That's an old joke. So anyway, but never mind. I don't know all the details because I don't remember reading those, but it had something to do with Tony and Rhodey going to Wakanda.
And so since Killmonger's there, it works out.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well, whoops. That is that does not make me want to read the comics, to be honest with you.
It may have been closer to this that
Yeah.
than we think, because as I
Yeah.
recall, it had something to do with Killmonger killing Black Panther, and that's why Tony had, but he didn't really kill Black Panther. And
Did he like
it's
overthrow
stupid.
him and did one of those things? Like where he's like, this is a coup.
Well, I think that happened with Killmonger, Black Panther, multiple times. And in fact, I think it was the sort of like second time it happened that I kind of like, I sort of wandered off from some of those storylines. It was also, I will credit some valiant white people writing these stories, but it was definitely white people writing these stories. I'm self-aware enough now that I would not presume to write a story about a black man's re reaction to white colonialism with this kind of depth. I really respect Marvel for making the film Black Panther and at least trying that, and as near as I can tell, at least getting some of that right. But then again, like as I mentioned in the pre-show, I'm an old, reasonably straight white guy, and so I need to shut the fork up when it comes to evaluations about whether that was spot on or not.
So, you know what? It sounds like we've actually wrapped up pretty much everything we want to say about this episode. I don't let me open the floor to violent agreement or reasoned dissent, but it seems like all of us have kind of hit a frustration point where we're like something had better happen to start making sense of why we've had all these cliffhangers and rando killings, or something had better swerve in the last three episodes, because this has been a remarkably unsatisfying series for all of the potential it had.
Yes, I think unsatisfying is, yes, that is exactly the adjective that I would use. And it's very frustrating to me because I desperately, desperately want to like it because it's a lot of the, it's got all the mythos and everything in there that I like seeing new content for. But again, this is just fanfic.
I do. I will point out a little bit more response, and then we're done. I've responded to the episode all I really needed to. But Darth Null on Twitter, who has a fantastic Twitter name, hi Swamp Kitten David. A thing he asked that I'm wondering about is, like, we've talked about what if Uatu is talking to Kang, and David said, what if Kang is employing Uatu to better understand his adversaries or straight up steal out of different timelines?
Oh, you're so smart. Our swamp kittens are so smart.
Oh,
We have some smarty
yeah.
pants swamp kittens.
Oh, man. The only reason I'd say that's not possible is because I don't trust the writers to have thought of that.
I don't think they're as clever as
Darth Null.
Darth Null. You've got some you've got some primo reefer there.
I was gonna say I appreciate your four-dimensional chessboard. Long game isn't chaos across all the universes, but using that chaos to really win big in the sacred timeline. And he makes a very good point in the follow-up where he says, I gotta wonder what the point of the multiverse is, if not the threat to our own universe. How can Kang use the branches to gain advantage in the one true timeline? And then my guess was that Kang is the phase four Thanos. And so whatever it is he's up to, the battle for our timeline is the Infinity War endgame piece of this next wave of stuff. And then he said, I was wondering why, what if? And something on this week's podcast, maybe he's talking to Kang, made me think it's all intel gathering or experimenting or developing something for the coming war. And I'm liking this theory very much. So thank you, Swamp Kitten David, for sharing your smarty pants with us, because that's great.
Wait, I need to get on the phone to Kevin Feige and get this man a job.
And just tell Kevin Feige he needs to start following us on Twitter, because all of our swamp kittens who take the time to post have been. I've pulled up the mentions and tweets and replies now, just so we could take a look at some of the contributions from our swamp kittens this week, and they are really pretty amazing. Sally J-P, every time you call us swamp kittens, my brain goes to Carol Baskin. So fun fact, Sally.
Oh, yes. I remember reading that one. I thought that was hysterical.
So fun fact. I haven't seen Tiger King on Netflix, and I have no intention of it. And one of the reasons I don't is because I live in the East Bay. I belong to the Oakland Zoo and I'm a member there. And last year, in an effort to keep the zoo afloat, they were selling a little subscription, a video streaming subscription series, where every day at 2 o'clock you could tune in and they would take the camera around to different animal pens at the zoo, because the zoo was empty then. Yeah. And the keepers and the keepers would talk to you about the animals and they'd feed them and chit chat. I got to see the alligators eating chicken, which is pretty great.
I was going to say, Lisa subscribed to the murder lizard cam for a nominal fee every month. Yeah,
I would absolutely do that. I love those guys. There are three of them and they're perfect. But there are also, until very recently, three perfect, beautiful tigers at the Oakland Zoo. And the day that they did the tiger talk with Lovejoy, that was her name, of the keeper, and another keeper whose name I don't remember off the top of my head, they showed us how they reward the cats by spraying them in the face with milk, because they really love licking the milk off there. And then the two keepers popped off for 20 minutes about how much they hate Tiger King and how much it actually glorified the whole business of roadside cats and exotic animal collecting, and how it didn't really emphasize the welfare of the animals. It chose to emphasize the spectacle. Mm-hmm. And once I heard these two women who have devoted their lives to the well-being of these former roadside cats, and how morally repelled they were by Carol Baskin, by the whole not Carol Baskin, the whole Tiger King thing, I was like, I can't watch it. I can't be part of it. So haven't seen it, but you know what? I will take Sally J-P's word for it. And I will continue to call you all swamp kittens, because I think it's awesome. Also wanted to big shout out to Swamp Kitten Gary for using Gary. The letter Kenny fandom.
Oh my goodness, Gary. Yeah. No needs to get honked off there, big shooter. Oh my God. Oh. So like I can hear it in every so we talked about honked off last week, if people don't remember. And Gary wrote a quick little reply to us in everybody's voices from Letterkenny about being honked off, and it was I freaked out. I did hear Kelly
laughing
yes
in Portland all the way
up and down the Eastern Seaboard,
up
really.
And down the Eastern Seaboard. Yes. Oh, it was delightful.
So but I'm so glad that Swamp Kittens is landing with you, albeit in ways I had never anticipated.
Yes. Also, shout out to Swamp Kitten Sebastian, who loves being part of the Kindle. So thank you, Sebastian, for your skillful application of the collective noun.
And shout out to Swamp Kitten Alex Chan, who asked us an excellent question a couple days ago, which is, what makes these universes notable, and not, say, the universe where traffic lights are blue? And Alex, it is my sincerest hope. It is my sincerest hope that we actually do start getting throwaway details like that, because this is one thing that has been disturbingly disappointing about all these episodes, mm-hmm. is the visuals are homogenous. All the stoplights have the same color schema. Everyone uses the same type mm-hmm. of, you know, Roman alphabet. Everyone eats pizza and thinks it's great.
You know what I think of is yeah. Into the Spider-Verse, when mm-hmm. we had, it was the right logo, but it didn't say Coca-Cola.
Yeah,
and yeah. they were the police department of New York instead of NYPD, yeah. and like mm-hmm. those little things that let you know, like, this is not the timeline with which you are familiar.
Yeah, no, that's great.
I really love that. And like also, that. Yeah. One more shout out to Emperor Morton, who mm-hmm. Filled his Twitter their Twitter name with emojis, and so I can't pronounce it. But let us know of the existence at a Seattle drugstore of Lego Swamp Kitten. Just need everyone to know this is a thing.
There was much
squeeing.
There was squeeing in iMessage this week over that one.
Oh my lord!
Yes, and please get in touch with the show at MCUTV at theincomparable.com, and I will give you my address. I will give mm-hmm. you Lisa's address so that Lisa can also partake in the joy that is the Lego murder lizard.
Oh my god! Could you
murder lizard minifig is like a thing. Oh my god!
An entire garland of them for your Christmas tree. It would be the best holiday ever.
See, now I want that.
I don't know what it is I love about this dumb Loki alligator so much, but I just do. And my husband has told me that apparently the Florida Gators fans are now showing up at games dressed as alligator Loki, and wow. that just delights me to no end. Like, just imagining all of these people sweating under a hot, humid, muggy Floridian sun, committed to the bit with the horns. I think that's beautiful.
I love it. Yeah.
See, this is why that show has a bigger impact than people think. And this yeah. is like one little bit in that show,
yeah.
and it just went through the
a character the in basically one episode for the most part,
yeah,
like, yeah. So but that's gonna do it for us. If you want to get a hold of us and you want us to fawn all over your fandom of our fandom, and we just have the moment of like how much we all like each other and mm-hmm. Can talk about this show, you can get us on Twitter at I Want My MCU TV. Our email address, if you like to kick it old school like that, is mcutv@theincomparable.com. Please send us your theories. Send us your theories for my house, your questions for Professor Don, and all murder lizard content for Lisa. we lovingly accept all of it.
I have no deep background. I have no theories. I just have unalloyed enjoyment of murder lizards.
That's all it is. So, yeah.
Yes. Yes. All right. So I think it's time for us to wrap it up. This has been an episode of I Want My MCU TV with Don Melton.
Para todo el tiempo, siempre.
Kelly Gamont.
Copy that, Cha-Cha.
And me, your host, Lisa Schmeiser. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time. Later, Swamp Kittens.
Too bad this might spell the end of the world, but that's a story for another day.